Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
By now, you've heard me describe the plight of the North when it comes to federal elections. The number of seats up here is so small that any overture by a leader or party is done mostly in service to a far larger block of voters down south who care about, quote, northern issues. But northern issues aren't a collection of concerns or a list of opinions to the people here in the Northwest Territories who live with them. They are everyday things. Mines that are closing, roads that are no longer drivable, the recognition of land claims, and the rapidly melting permafrost and ice. That's the real stuff. And if you ask people here, it's not the federal government, no matter who wins, that's ultimately going to get most of these things done. In the Northwest Territories, which government is in charge in Ottawa after this election matters mostly in regards to how much of that government's decision-making power it is willing to cede to the governments that actually get things done on the ground in the North. So will any government offer enough of that independence, or will the Northwest Territories, and First Nations up here in particular, once again find themselves choosing the least bad option? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Today, our final episode in the Northern Trilogy of our Lay of the Land series features Deneza Nakeko, who works for Dene Nawo, an organization that aims to advance social and environmental justice for Northern people. Deneza, how is democracy going up in the Northwest Territories right now?
Well, this colonial experiment of democracy continues up here in the North in a bunch of different ways. And actually, I think it's kind of a pretty fascinating place to live when it comes to political development because of indigenous land claims and self-governments. We're living in a place and a time where governments are being created all around us. Plus, we still have our traditional colonial entities of the territorial and federal governments. So that mixture is actually a pretty exciting and confusing place to live in.
When politicians do come to visit, what do they typically talk about, and how meaningful is what they address to the people actually living there?
Well, I think for the reality of the North is a lot different than I think the narrative around the North. And I think the narrative around the North has mostly been crafted by people that don't actually live here. The majority of our population in Canada lives in the South. And that majority of the population have been formulating their own story and sense of the North. You know, when we travel south, there's a lot of people, they're pretty fascinated by the fact that people actually live up here. So we get a lot of questions. And honestly, some of the questions we get is, you know, do we live in igloos? Are there polar bears up here? So the general knowledge of the reality of the North is lacking, really, when it comes to the actual narrative of the North. And as Northerners, we don't really get to participate in crafting that narrative as much. So I think it would be really important for politicians not to come up here to tell us what they think, but actually to come up here to experience our reality of life in the North and just to listen to what the people need up here.
When you mentioned that it's a fascinating time because Indigenous nations are developing their own governments, how is that working with the federal government currently? I know that the Liberals came to power in 2015 with a lot of promises, and I'm just wondering how people up there see them as having delivered or not.
As Indigenous peoples in this country, the history in Canada is not really good for us. We've been treated as second, third class citizens. Really, this whole nation state is like a regime of oppression from an Indigenous perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the issues that we face here in the North We have a lot of social issues. We lead in a lot of statistical categories that I don't think other jurisdictions would be proud of. High rates of suicide, like a lot of social issues. I think most of that stems from the fact that there's decisions being made in our traditional territories, and those decision-making authorities don't actually live here. They're kind of stationed in Yellowknife or in Ottawa. So I think being able to have these Indigenous governments have more decision-making power and authority, I think that it would be a good thing, and I think we'll alleviate a lot of our social issues. I like to talk about the political development of the North. Up here, we have the Creecho government, and the Creecho government is pretty much the only signed land claim and self-government agreement, and they've been operating as their own government since about 2005. Wow. And what I like to say is that the Creecho government, I think, is our most Canadian government we have in this country. And the definition of that is because the Creecho are Indigenous peoples up here, and they negotiated with Canadians, members from the federal government and the territorial government. They all came together, had a meeting of the minds, and agreed to this agreement. Canadians and Indigenous people creating this system of government that actually makes sense for the people that actually live in that geographic area. So since it was created here by Canadians and Indigenous people, I think by definition, the Creecho government is our most Canadian government we have in this country, because our federal parliamentary system, as Canadians, we've never had the opportunity to create our own system of government for the people that actually live here. That has been imposed on us from another country. So we operate in a legislative process that comes from another part of the world. That's pretty much the definition of colonization as well, too.
Right. What are some of the things that Indigenous governments can do for the people living in them that are not typically done by the federal government or the territorial government?
There's a lot of different things. We have to understand that, just to paint a picture and provide some context, the reality of the North is a lot different from the reality of the rest of Canada. In southern Canada, there's people that can probably live their whole life without even meeting or interacting with an Indigenous person. Just the population is so dense, but up here, you know, we're half the population is Indigenous. So even if you're like a super racist and don't like Native people, this is not the place for you, because whether you like it or not, in the grocery store or on the street, you're going to be interacting with an Indigenous person. So the awareness from the Indigenous perspective and the general public is much higher, I think, than the rest of Canada. But also, you know, our capital here is Yellowknife, and this colonial experiment of this government, actually the territorial government is turning into a microcosm of Canada when it comes to decision making. And our federal government system, Ottawa, is the seat of power, and like, people go there to make decisions that, you know, affect people in Alberta, British Columbia, and the Maritimes. You know, and, you know, a lot of times people from Alberta are like, you know, hey, Ottawa, stay out of our business type of a thing. You know, that's where all the decisions are made, in Ottawa. And that's what the Northwest Territories is turning into when it comes to political decision-making power. A lot of that decision-making power is happening in Yellowknife. And the rest of the northern regions are like, hey, Yellowknife, stay out of our business.
Right.
And the realities in the communities, a lot of the communities are remote. Our population is pretty small here in the Northwest Territories, like 43,000 people. There's actually more people that live in Grand Prairie, Alberta, than the entire Northwest Territories. But we're also spread out over a vast landmass. And some of these communities are only fly-in. So some of the communities don't even have a road access in and out. And some of these communities don't even have a police officer in their community. And some of these communities don't even have a nurse or a health center. And, you know, we see it time and again where all the people that come up here, they kind of come in a savior attitude where they have this idea to kind of fix the North. But as the longer they stay here and they get entangled in the complexities of this place, they slowly realized that there's a lot more than meets the eye when it comes to the North.
Well, there's one federal seat for the entire territory. So I guess our question, because this series is analyzing the impact of the federal election on communities across Canada. So the first thing that comes to mind after what you've just described is, what kind of promises and policies can these candidates propose that would actually make a difference across the territory?
Well, it's a different animal, and then really we have to be strategic and how and who is elected as our member of parliament, because in reality we don't have a lot of political power federally with one member of parliament, and if you combined say one party gets a member of parliament from the Yukon, the Northwest Territories, and Nunavut, that landmass is pretty much half the country, but it's only three.
Yeah.
And then it's not a lot of political power. So we understand that reality when it comes to Ottawa. And I think from an Indigenous perspective, a lot of the Indigenous governments here are really pushing for the completion of negotiations for land claims and self-government. But not only that, there's a real big push for the implementation of these agreements that have already been made. One of the biggest holdups with the federal government is not like actually making the deals, but putting the deals into action, the implementation of these things, and the, I guess, what they call the devolution of authority and decision-making power from the federal government to more towards the Indigenous governance. I think from an Indigenous perspective, that's more of a priority. So any leverage that these governments can have through the member of parliament or actually just going to Ottawa and lobbying those like upper middle level of the bureaucracy of Ottawa, there's a bunch of different ways. And in the North, I think one of the characteristics of Northerners is our creativity and our imagination. Not that we have the luxury of time to sit around and kind of like exercise our creative juices, but we're forced to be creative and use our imagination because we have a lack of resources up here. And not a lot of people pay attention to us. So even if we do are loud and have strong messages to Ottawa, usually a lot of the solutions depend on our own ingenuity and our own creativity. So a lot of the solutions to a lot of the issues up here, Northerners are forced to be creative in order to kind of figure those things out.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
So given all that, how do people in the territory decide who to vote for, and what do they see as the differences between the major parties?
Well, you know, the obvious fact. I mean, this election is really crazy. You know, you think about it. You know, we have one prime minister who's in his past has done blackface and brownface.
Yeah,
and that's horrible. But then, you know, he's like the lesser of two evils compared to the other guy. So you're like, what are you going to do? And then, I really don't think the new Democratic Party will be able to get a stronghold for leadership in this country as well, too. So we call it a democracy, but, you know, there's not a lot of choice, really, in the reality of our situation up here. And really, we have to be strategic about that. I think it's more like just an exercise in duty to vote. And really, you know, like whoever gets in pretty much is just going to be whipped by their political party to just end up being a prop to stand behind the current leader of that political party whenever they talk about Northern or Indigenous issues.
That sounds really cynical. I'm not judging, but it's sad.
Well, you know, and so we're used to not being heard or being listened to up here in the North. So like I said earlier, you know, we're forced to be creative in a lot of our solutions. And, you know, we have to take, like, you know, a stock into, you know, our situation and where we're at. And we got to try to make the best out of it. That's how we be able to survive up here for generations and generations as Indigenous people. But, you know, as you get older and, you know, however many political cycles you live through, you can see a pattern and you can see that, you know, really nothing changes. So I think from the Indigenous perspective here in the North, that the ratification and implementation of all those land claims would be very helpful in a lot of ways. And again, looking at the Kwichil government as an example, since they've ratified their land claim and they're operating as the Kwichil government, they've been looking at mining opportunities. They're looking at building roads. So their priorities have shifted, and they really want to make that government work. So they're open for business and they're open to different opportunities within their territory. The other regions that are still negotiating and don't have an agreement, that's their priority, is to get that deal done. So while that's their main priority, all the other priorities like mining or resource development is kind of secondary or third. And the main goal is to finish these agreements. Once those agreements are done, a lot of these, I think, regional Indigenous governments, you'll see a vast spike in economic activity and opportunity. But for a lot of the regions, they're kind of split up and they're at different levels, I guess, of self-governance when it comes to that. Mm. So, and at those different levels, they have different priorities as well, too. And, you know, that's just an example of some of the political complexities in this vast territory with a small population.
If a government is elected in October, and I'm not even talking about which one, could be any of them, but that was to make a dent in the kind of a cynical outlook towards Ottawa that you just described, what would have to be their top priority with regards to the territory? Would it be land claims?
I think that should be on top of the list. Even here in the North, you know, the other half of the population is non-Indigenous. And especially in Yellowknife, I think a lot of people are really shocked by the diversity here in Yellowknife. And, but even the non-Indigenous population, they're really gung-ho about land claims and self-government. They're like, we need to get these deals done. So for the, not only for the political development of the North, but the economic development of the North as well, too. I think that these processes have stalled a lot of different things, and we're kind of in this middle ground and limbo of who decides what about where here in the North. But other than that, there's a lot of other major issues. Climate change is a huge issue around the world, but up here, the traditional land users, the harvesters, the people that take medicines, the trappers, the people that are on the land a lot, still living that traditional lifestyle, they've been sounding the alarms of the drastic changes in the territory up here. The town of Tuktoyaktuk is, they're scared that they might fall into the Arctic Ocean because of erosion. Water and hydrology has been changing here because of melting permafrost. Also, infrastructure-wise, all the roads that we do have in the communities that we have are all built on permafrost. So once that permafrost melts the roads, it's going to all our schools and buildings, our foundations. And so those are some of the main issues, but also jobs. We have a lack of jobs here. You either work for the government or you're working at a mine. And so there's not a lot of real options. And, We don't really have a university up here. There's a push to establish a polytechnic university. I think that will go a long way too at diversifying our economy, because we don't have that knowledge economy. If we have a university here, that's a lot of jobs. We have a lot of knowledge up here that's pretty specific to up here. the reality that I live in is that, you know, if I want to go back to university and to get a degree in Northern studies, I have to go to a Southern institution.
Right.
And that really doesn't make sense.
Do you get the sense of all those issues? Because that's a long list. And I mean, we've heard them from other provinces too, but of all those issues, do you get the sense that there is one that people will actually change their vote on? And is there an issue that's, for people who are single issue voters, that's the most attractive?
Well, again, our population is so diverse, and we have actually, we have a growing and thriving population of immigrants that come from all over the world. And so their voting patterns are, it's pretty hard to predict. And for all the indigenous regions and peoples, it's incredibly diverse as well, too. Well, we have to understand, like, officially the government of the Northwest Territories recognizes 11 official languages here in the North.
Right.
So that's pretty, you know, diverse for our small population. And then it's really hard to put your finger on like that one hot button issue, but like, you know, jobs and the economy is one, how we take care of the land and the climate is another one. Housing, we didn't even touch on housing and like, you know, the lack of healthcare. Like our reality is here, like Yellowknife has been centralized. So a lot of communities, even if they have a doctor, it's very limited what the doctor can do. And then they're like, they have to be like records and people have to be sent to Yellowknife, just to see the doctor. So that's, like a lot of money to pay for the air travel from a small community to go to Yellowknife to be diagnosed. Like I said, this is the place for such a small population in vast landscape. You know, we have a lot of complex issues.
Well, thank you for sharing some of the narrative that we don't often get in reporting that gets to us down here.
Yeah, I appreciate your interest and this opportunity to speak to you. It's very good to be part of the big story or any story that's coming out of the North. And I think that you will find that if you come up here, not only are we complex, but we're really warm and generous and hospitable. And, you know, we really like when visitors come up here, and because we know it's such a long way to travel. So when people make the effort, then we make the effort to welcome them up here as well, too.
Thanks, Deniza. Deniza Nakeko, a founding member of Dene Nawo. That was The Big Story. For more from us, we are at thebigstorypodcast.ca. Up to 8 now in our Lay of the Land series. There's 5 more coming. You can also talk to us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. Leave us a note. Let us know what you think. And you can review us wherever you get podcasts. Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify. You will find us there. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.